From the American Tobacco Historic District in downtown Durham, this is Due South on WUNC. I'm Leonita Inge. As pro-Palestinian protests on college campuses continue across the country, it's been a particularly eventful 24 hours or so at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Yesterday, there were protester detentions and arrests. Flags came down and up and back down again. Classes were eventually canceled. Here are some of the sounds from Tuesday on the UNC Chapel Hill campus. That was audio from the Daily Tar Heels video post yesterday on X, formerly known as Twitter. The Daily Tar Heels student reporters have been hard at work documenting and writing about the protests on their campus. And joining us to talk about the latest developments are two of their editors who have been following this story for days. Liv Riley is managing editor at the Daily Tar Heel and a UNC senior. And Lauren Rhodes is university editor at the Daily Tar Heel and a sophomore at UNC. I know you've been covering this pretty constantly for several days, and you must be a little tired. We're really grateful that you're able to make it to the studio this morning to talk with us. And also joining us in our Due South studio is WUNC's education reporter, Liz Schlimmer, who has been following this story as well. Welcome, Liz.
Thank you.
Well, you know, Liz, we're going to turn to you soon, but first, let's start with Liv and Lauren. Liv, what's the latest you've heard or seen about the status of the pro-Palestinian protest this morning and what may happen later today?
Yeah, I don't have an answer for that, unfortunately, because so yesterday morning, it started at 5:30 in the morning. Students were arrested. Protesters were arrested and detained. We saw increased cop presence all throughout the day, so much so that the demonstrators actually decided not to come back to the quad as originally planned around 6:30 p.m. There's still probably at least a dozen or at least 100 police officers all throughout Chapel Hill right now. So I think people are kind of laying low and trying to figure out what the next steps are for safety.
Yeah, it was pretty quiet all night there.
It was, which was such a complete drastic change from what we saw around 3 p.m. When there was at least 1,000 demonstrators and watchers and officers all around just the central part of campus.
Mm. Was that a surprise to you, you know, covering this story day in and day out? I know across the country, police also moved in with force, even at Columbia. And so was it a surprise that the police would eventually come when, you know, we know what the demands from the university were about these encampments?
I don't think it was a surprise. We've been following our fellow student journalists all across the country, especially at Columbia, and seeing how they've been covering it. And we've spent at least 24 hours, I think me and Lauren have spent outside at the encampment covering it. And I think it was just a matter of time. But when I got there at 6:30 yesterday morning and saw how many police were there, that was definitely something I wasn't expecting to see.
Because it was what, Chapel Hill police and university police?
So Chapel Hill police was not involved. But all colleges are in the UNC system. Their police officers can't be pulled from the scene when something like this happens. So we got there and it was State Highway Patrol, UNC Police, Appalachian, NC State, ECU. And it was just crazy to see a whole statewide effort there.
Well, tell me, Lauren, if you could just describe this space, this place that we're even talking about. Where is this on campus? Is it a big area? You know, what does it look like?
Yes, ma'am. So this is the quad on UNC's campus. On one side, we have South Building. That's where all the UNC administration works. That's where the Chancellor's Suite is, where the Chancellor works. On the other side, we have Wilson Library, which is this big historic library. It kind of feels like Hogwarts. It's really cool. But right in the center is this huge flagpole, talking giant, super tall, huge American flag on it. And on either side, there's probably about like 100 feet of quad space. It's huge. It's where all the students study and all the students sit outside in the summer. And over the last few days, we've seen it transformed into a camping ground for the encampment for the pro-Palestinian protesters. It was kind of an astonishing effort of how many people showed up and, you know, kind of took over this quad space. Mm-hmm. And when we got there yesterday morning, it was equally as astonishing to see how quickly it was cleared out. There were barriers around the entire quad. And the entire quad was closed off to students except for the very bottom part and the part closest to South Building.
And then we know about the arrests. Maybe you can tell me a little bit about that. How many students ended up being arrested?
So I think that number is still a little bit unclear. So UNC Media Relations has gotten back to us a couple different times with changing numbers. And we do know that 36 people were detained. Some were affiliated with the university and some were not. Somewhere around the low teen numbers were the amount of students. That is still fluctuating. And six people were arrested.
Well, do you know what all the charges were? I saw mostly trespassing.
I think a lot of them were trespassing, yes.
Hmm. Thanks, Liz. Liz Schlimmer, education reporter at WUNC. Also in this studio, Liv Riley, managing editor, The Daily Tar Heel, and Lauren Rhodes, university editor, The Daily Tar Heel. We'll be right back with more on Due South. I'm Leonita Inge, and this is Due South on WUNC. If you've been paying any attention to any news lately, you'll know that pro-Palestinian demonstrations on campuses across the country have been dominating the headlines and the public discourse. Yesterday, dozens of protesters at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill were detained when they refused to leave a tent encampment on school grounds. I'm here today with Liz Schlimmer, education reporter at WUNC, Liv Riley, managing editor, The Daily Tar Heel, and Lauren Rhodes, university editor, The Daily Tar Heel. Well, Liv, I want to talk about the students. I know when police came to the scene on campus where the students and everyone was protesting, I guess, an encampment, you know, it was with force and with pepper spray.
Definitely. I think the first thing is just I was actually in my last day of college classes as a senior. I was in my capstone course and I walked out of my building knowing that we had reporters on the scene and that a lot of things were happening. And it was definitely the strangest thing on campus that I've ever seen because it was probably around 1,000 people and there was force and there was pepper spray in the air. I mean, I had a taste of it in my mouth, and I wasn't even that close, so I don't know, like, what Lauren felt, and one of our photographers got pepper sprayed, and it honestly looked like sheer chaos, and I don't think I've ever seen anything like that on campus. I don't know if you feel the same way, Lauren.
It certainly felt like sheer chaos. I was right in the middle, and they were passing out masks for the pro-Palestinian protesters, and I took one, but I didn't really intend to use it because I was a part of the media. And the moment that pepper spray hit my mouth, I put it on. It got in my eyes. Like, I took out my contacts last night, and I guess there was, like, remnants all over the place. But it was just mostly really scary to have all your friends by your side. And as a reporter, you always, you know, feel like you can take on anything in the world. And then to realize that you and a lot of your team are young girls in a crowd that has a lot of grown adults and grown strong police officers and that you can't fight the crowd is really scary. And the most I could do was just try to get closer to the barriers so that they could kind of hold me up while I filmed. And I listened to the police officers and complied and everything. But it was definitely a moment where I was like, okay, do I run or do I go into another safe space and watch from a distance or do I stay here? And I did feel like it was safe enough for me to stay there. If the police had come back with riot gear, I probably would have felt differently.
Well, late morning on Tuesday, we know that an email was sent to the university community by Interim Chancellor Lee Roberts and Provost J. Christopher Clemens, and it kind of read in part, "We must consider the physical safety of all of our students, faculty, and staff. In addition, we are alarmed at the rising accounts of anti-Semitic speech, and we categorically denounce this and any other incidents of prejudice." So I'm wondering, you know, after speaking to the students and covering this event, would you call this, I guess, an anti-Semitic protest?
I would not personally call this an anti-Semitic protest. I have been out there for many, many hours, just like all of our other student journalists, and I have not heard anti-Semitic speech or anything extremely hateful directed towards the Jewish population. And I actually found that email very interesting to come from the provost and the chancellor. I think a lot of us were intrigued by the fact that that email included photos from after the encampment had been taken down by police officers, and just a very interesting tone, in my opinion, to put out to the student body, where on our last day of classes, the tensions are obviously very high on campus with everything going on.
Yeah, I want to stress that for the most part, it's just students inside this encampment, right? They were juggling and playing and dancing to the Cupid Shuffle and like just hanging out and making art for most of the time. And they were very good at picking up trash. And so it was very interesting to see the photos Interim Chancellor Roberts attached to that, because the aerial shot after the police took it down or after the police detained people was not what the encampment looked like for most of my time reporting on it.
Well, WUNC's Jay Price, he went to the campus, UNC Chapel Hill, yesterday, late in the afternoon, and he spoke with NC State student Mason Hamza, who criticized the decision to disperse the protesters.
We've had frat parties that come here and put up tents when there's a UNC versus Duke game. So how does it make sense for us to say that now tents aren't allowed? How does it make sense for us to also say that students using facilities at nighttime, right, when we have professors who let us in to use those facilities, like to go into the bathroom, for example, how is that infringing upon anything that the university stands for? And why would you send a police force with guns? Why would you send a police force with pepper spray? That doesn't make any sense to me, that's all.
Well, WUNC's Jay Price also interviewed two counter-protesters who didn't want to give their names. They said that they were UNC students, and they were standing on the steps of South Building with a group of a couple of dozen people that were holding up two Israeli and one U.S. flag.
They brought an Israeli flag out here, and people who supported Israel, and especially people who didn't support them taking down the American flag, just kind of rallied around that.
Especially after half mass, after the shootings in Charlotte yesterday, when the U.S. Marshals were killed and sheriff deputies were hurt.
Yeah,
this is everybody who like just didn't want to see that came up here and started showing the American flag and the Israeli flag.
We weren't really out here to like kind of instigate anything, I guess. We're just here to, you know, show our support for what we believe is the right side.
Those were voices at the protest yesterday at UNC Chapel Hill. The last bit of audio also referencing the killing of four police officers in Charlotte Monday. But today I'm talking with Liv Riley, managing editor at the Daily Tar Heel, and Lauren Rhodes of the Daily Tar Heels, the university editor, to kind of sort through all of this, and Liz Schlimmer, WUNC's education reporter, who's also here. Well, Liz, you were on campus Monday after the encampments went up and before the recent escalation. What was it like there? What was it like there Monday? Because leading up to everything that just happened.
It was peaceful all day. I would say at some points downright quiet. But the protesters were also preparing for the possibility of a police sweep of their encampment. They had gotten photo evidence of parking spaces that were reserved for police, as well as vans that they believed would be used to round up people who were detained. So they were preparing for imminent arrests. Really didn't know when that would happen. towards the end of the day, it became apparent it was probably going to happen overnight or in the morning, which is ultimately what did happen. But it was, yeah, it was very peaceful. And there were also students, like you mentioned from that soundbite, who are also coming from NC State, who are coming from Duke University as well.
So that's really the debate, you know, how peaceful was this gathering? And what did the Carolina administration perceive this gathering to be in order to move in, I guess, the way that they did yesterday? I know when you were out there, you talked to a graduate student with Students for Justice in Palestine who identified only as Sophie. That's right. Let's hear part of what Sophie had to say.
That endowment is over $10 billion, and we don't know what happens in it. At all. And so one of our demands is to disclose these investments so we actually know where our money is going.
What did you learn from Sophie? What did she say and why?
She was talking about the demands that Students for Justice in Palestine had. The chant that we heard most often from students was disclose, divest. And what they meant by that is that they want the UNC system as well as Chapel Hill to disclose what the investments in their endowment fund are.
Because that's the whole point of why students across the country say that the pro-Palestinian students are have these encampments and have been protesting, right? It's all been about saying divestiture, right?
Yes. And they're even asking what is the UNC system and Chapel Hill's endowment invested in. That's not transparent. The UNC management company that runs these investments, their annual report just says vague things like this is how much goes to energy or this is how much goes to real estate. And so they're saying we want disclosures of what companies are being invested in with this money that has been donated to the university to support the university's mission.
Right. And I wonder how easy or hard is it to get to that information, even though UNC Chapel Hill is a state school. You know, I know when I think of Columbia and Harvard and Yale private schools, it may be harder to get through that paywall. But I wonder if we will ever be able to find that out, say, at a school like Carolina or even UT Austin.
Yeah, and I think that was the point that these protesters were making, is that if this is a public university, why aren't the investments also publicly disclosed?
Yeah, and if I can jump in, this isn't a new ask for the students. UNC's chapter of Students for Justice in Palestine first said they were demanding divestment October 21st of 2023. It wasn't until October 27th when they released what their specific demands were on social media. But they've been asking for transparency from administration, a coalition with students and faculty members about divestment to be formed, and for divestment itself.
And this is something that happens periodically at the university, too. I mean, we've seen other divestment protests in other eras.
That's right. That's one reason I wanted to definitely bring up for us to chat about how these protests at UNC Chapel Hill have been similar or different to protests at other colleges and campuses. I know you've been keeping up with that. I mean, the numbers keep growing. It's at least, 50 universities now.
Yeah, I think as student journalists, we've really looked to our other student journalists all across the United States on how they are covering it, how they're taking safety precautions, how they are serving their local community. And so I think what happened at UNC yesterday definitely seemed like one small piece in a continuing movement. I don't think Students for Justice in Palestine, known well as SJP, is done fighting their fight with the university. I think yesterday ended on a very jarring note. That's, I think, the word that I would use for that. And so I don't know what is to come at any of these universities, especially UNC. But I know Lauren and I were talking on our way over here. After the dust settled last night, we went home and I was glued to my phone screen looking through Twitter and social medias and news, just trying to figure out what was going on all over the country as well.
And also, we can't ignore the flags going up and down, you know, where it did, the American flag coming down, the Palestinian flag going up. Can you speak to that?
That was an insane moment. That was something I don't think either of us thought was going to happen. I think, so the American flag in the middle of the quad went down, Palestinian flag went up, Palestinian flag came down, American flag went back up by administration, and then a protester took down the American flag again, and then a group of counter-protesters removed the flag from the premises because it was on the ground. That was a moment that I think really showed just how high emotions were running on both sides of this, that the American flag is such a symbol in our country. And I cannot imagine the pain that students had to be in to take it down, nor can I imagine the pain that students had to be in to feel like they had to physically hold it off the ground because they were the only ones that could.
Yeah, with interim Chancellor Lee Roberts standing by.
Yeah, I walked out and intercepted Lauren. And I think the first thing I said, is there not a flag on that pole? No matter what flag it was, seeing that pole bare that sits in the middle of our campus, and no matter what side you're on, I think it's a jarring view.
I know, Liv and Lauren, you are student journalists, but you're also students. You're students, I guess students first. I don't know. You're journalists first yet or students first? And probably a lot is heavy on your mind and your hearts. Where are you getting, I guess, support from? I mean, are you still really talking to your parents a lot, family and friends?
I have a giant group chat that I made yesterday just to text updates. To everyone, I was just like, just follow the DTH Twitter thread. That's where I am. But definitely my partner has been amazing. My parents have been amazing. I think it's hard to hear your child say like, hey, I'm going to go into active police presence today. And I really appreciate the support that they've given me as well as the entire DTH team. You know, alums have given us food. I think as reporters, we've really stuck by together and helped out each other writing and covering this.
Well, you all had a very busy, not only week, but busy year at UNC Chapel Hill. Keep doing the hard work that you're doing. I'm here today with Liv Riley, managing editor at the Daily Tar Heel, Lauren Rhodes, university editor at the Daily Tar Heel, and Liz Schlimmer, education reporter at WUNC. Thank you very much for coming in to talk about this tough subject, and good luck.
Thank you.
I'm Leonita Inge, and this is Due South. You're listening to Due South. I'm Leonita Inge.
And I'm Jeff Kabiri.
And you know what, Jeff? It's time for another Southern mixtape.
Let it roll.
Today we have in the studio Dr. Ajamu Dillahunt Holloway. He's an assistant professor in the Department of History at NC State. You know, you may think he's sort of a nerd. I don't think he's a nerd necessarily. I just think he's a serious young man, and he's been working all his adult life on fighting the power. I mean, I remember you when you were a student at North Carolina Central University. Weren't you the student body president?
No, I wasn't. But
you, I thought you were. You walked around like you were.
Yeah, no. I related to our student body president and tried to bring issues of social change to them.
So, when you're out protesting and marching, what are some of the songs that really would get you motivated?
You know, I was a part of an organization called the Black Youth Project 100, and just like, you know, SNCC would have freedom singers,
right?
You know, I have an old soul, so I really love the old tunes from the civil rights movement, you know, Woodside, all you want, you know. But, you know, young people in my generation, you know, kind of mixed it up. And so there's a song by young people in the Black Youth Project 100 that has a, you know, a remix to What Side Are You On? And so that would get me fired up. You know, Ella Baker was a freedom fighter, and she taught us how to fight.
Ella Baker was a freedom fighter. Ain't that show no love, like the world against us. Being born with no luck and mourning is stuck. Fight the power like Chuck.
But we gonna fight all day and night. And so when I would hear that, I'm like, okay, I'm among people that that
Ella
get it,
Baker
that understand.
From Shaw University.
Yep. And play
the cause is a through line, yeah, right? Like the music brings you together. It
That's
lifts
right.
everybody up. It gets it moving.
That's right. And, you know, I love North Carolina Central University. When I was there, we would have SNCC veterans come to campus to talk about building political power, to talk about Lowndes County, to talk about the Six Pan-African Congress. But the first event we had in 2017 was Music and the Movement. Mm. And so SNCC veterans who were part of the SNCC Freedom Singers came to campus to talk about what the music did, how it brought people together, how it sustained the struggle. And of course, there was a lot of singing going on there. But yeah, the music and the movement is just
it's strong. It makes me think of Bernice Johnson Regan with Sweet Honey in the Rock. And when she was young, she used to really just light up the room and light up the march.
Yeah. Yeah.
We who believe in freedom, cannot rest. We who believe in freedom, cannot rest until the killing of black men, black mothers.
So anything from Sweet Honey and the Rock, I'm down for.
Yeah.
What about you, Jeff?
I don't. Public Enemy, Fight the Power.
Cannot ignore Fight the Power.
Let me ask it this way. When do you like to listen to Public Enemy, Fight the Power? Like, is there a time of the day or week? Like, if it gets the blood pumping.
I think I used to clean up on Saturdays to that song. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just could play it every weekend.
Yep.
I enjoyed it. And you know, we grew up in the video age, so you want to just watch the video at the same time. Jeff, I don't want to talk about Beyonce all the time.
I'm
trying not to do that, but I tell you, when I heard her song "Black Parade," it just really did something to me. You know, it just starts off like, you know, I'm going back to the South. You know,
I'm going back to the South. I'm going back where my roots ain't watered down. Growing like a bulb. Ancestor put me on game. Long time on gold chains. With my old shoe in a jail. Drop all on me.
She can sing an anthem now.
Yeah. Beyonce, she's a legend. My wife went all the way out to California.
She went to the Renaissance tour.
She went to the tour. Beyonce just, I was looking and, you know, I said, I'm not interested in going. You know, you go ahead. But when I saw the videos, I'm like, her craft as a performer, her ability to capture people and to represent the culture in that way, I'm like, I need to go. But then I looked at the tickets and said, you know, I'll watch it on my friends and keep working.
Yeah, I think I have a few mortgage payments on that new house.
Yeah.
What is a song that you want to play for your son in the first few months just to instill something? Like, what is it you're going to reach for first to be like, son, you need to hear this?
Well, you know, being in Durham, I think a song and an artist that I play often and I'm going to expose him to very, very early on is Gregory Porter. Mm-hmm. You know, he comes here quite often and I'm there every time. I don't miss a show. I can't miss a show. But he has a song called Don't Lose Your Head of Steam.
Okay.
And it's really a song, you know, he's talking to a young boy and he's saying, I'm counting on you to get me to the other side. And it's not to put pressure on him, but I interpret it as, you know, don't lose your head of steam in terms of the drive, the focus, the discipline needed to be a human in this world and to do social good.
Young man, I'm counting on you.
And so I have to play some of that good Gregory Porter. Mm-hmm. And he also has a song that's one of my favorite called 1960 What? And it's about Dr. King. You know, it's like, there's a man, voice of the people, standing on the balcony of the Rainbow. Yeah. I mean, Gregory Porter just has music that is relevant, that speaks to you, and that can be applied to various situations. Because he can go from the very serious to worldview to mentor style to going all the way to love, you know, and talking about family and, you know.
Your boxes, I'll get out. You can't hold me in these chains, I'll get out.
When I was an undergrad, I took a class, Black Feminist Thought, and we read a book about Lauryn Hill and her music, and you know what it inspires. But you gotta have her.
I mean, there's a sound from the Fugees Leonita, what else is top of mind for you, if anything from a different era or anything that's...
You know, I have to include on this list Mahalia Jackson, because, you know, we all know that was Martin Luther King Jr.'s, like, favorite, you know, favorite singer. And he used to actually call her up when he needed inspiration, even for the next fight, for the next march. You know, he needed her almost. I remember in a movie that she even sang to him on the phone.
Wow.
You know, he just needed that. And I think we have to include something by Mahalia Jackson.
Yes.
I am tired.
I'll ask this one, This Little Light of Mine. Do you have a favorite? I have a favorite rendition. Do you have? I'll tell you mine if you want. I can go first, or you can give me my favorite's Sam Cooke's.
Yeah.
But do you have a favorite rendition? Because there are several renditions, right, of This Little Light of Mine.
I would say anyone. I did love the song, and you know, Change Gonna Come. We had an event at NCCU, and Dr. Freddie Parker, he was talking about, you know, HBCUs and movement leadership and where we are. And he just broke out in song. And I mean, he just captured the room. Everybody started singing along, but he was singing A Change Gonna Come.
I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a
I think about Common and John Legend's song, Glory.
Yes.
I had that as my song.
That
I remember,
was in the Selma movie.
Yeah, the Selma movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I remember I kept playing it so much. Everybody was like, okay, you know, enough. My wife, but, you know, then girlfriend at the time was like, I've heard it enough, you know.
I get chills. Maybe I haven't listened to it as many times as you have. I still get chills when I hear that, their rendition.
Yeah.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory, glory, glory. The heavens, no man, no weapon formed against. Yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends.
I'm gonna make you guys smile now.
Good.
Because when I, you know, Ajama, when I think of this fascinating article that you wrote, Victory Through Struggle, Black Workers for Justice and the Fight for Economic and Environmental Justice in North Carolina, and we think about what happened in Rocky Mount, you know, like in 1988, and the movement of the workers there. Guess what song came out in 1988? Oh, my goodness. Bobby McFerrin's Don't Worry, Be Happy.
Oh, wow.
That's 35 years old?
Yes.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Now, talking about a song that I played so much, people said, oh, okay, stop.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Now that brings a smile to my face.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, we could all use that song. I wish we could cue it up, you know, right now.
Here's a little song I wrote. You might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry. Be happy.
Well, thank you so much, Jahmu Dillahunt Holloway, for joining us in our studios at Due South and for this Southern mixtape.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
Enjoyed it, too.
This is Due South. Due South is a production of WUNC and a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
Our producers are Stacia Brown, Cole Del Charco, and Rachel McCarthy. Denarius Thomas is our technical director. Aaron Kiever is our executive producer.
Our theme music is by Quilla. For more Due South, go to duesouthradio.org. Download and subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
I'm Jeff Tiberi.
And I'm Leonita Inge. Thanks for listening.